Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
The Salvation Army Thrift Store. We're not for profit. We're for appreciating the classics. For ever-growing amateur collections. For finding the sounds that speak to your soul. We're for making a difference right here in your community. At the Salvation Army Thrift Store, we're not for profit. We're for good. Shop today at the Salvation Army Thrift Store near you.
Welcome back, everybody, to what will certainly be a big JR-rated episode of The Damage Report. JR's here, of course. That's an important component.
You have to make sure that goes down correctly.
Exactly. But there's other reasons, too. Donald Trump is still the president, so enough said. We're going to get to a lot of stuff. We've got tons of stuff. Should be really fun. Really fast, I did a live video before the show about Bernie Sanders. The breaking news this morning was that he was hospitalized with some sort of chest condition. A stent has been apparently put in. And all over Twitter, it's how serious is this? And I think that Francesca Fiorentini, she summed it up best by saying, everybody has a stent. Stents are the HPV of seniors. Which is true. It is very common for people over 50 to 60 years old. So Francesca, very well done there. So we've got the migrant crisis. We've got Giuliani trying to sue the swamp. Should billionaires exist? We're going to have a debate. We've got human rights violations around the world. We've got a lot. JR, what do you have?
I think I'm going to have a good time because I wish I would have been able to talk more about the Bernie Sanders and the stent and the heart condition, because just we're going to see what the fallout comes of that. It's
attacks against him based on it?
Yeah, it's weird that it's okay to say things like that when someone is sick. Or I mean, we keep hearing about every time RBG, of course, in the Supreme Court has any kind of condition from an ankle to an actual internal issue, you know.
Yeah,
we keep seeing that, and eventually it goes straight to, okay, how soon before die. Because it's all about the next political move instead of like, is the person okay?
Yeah.
It's a little frustrating.
Yeah, if Ruth Bader Ginsburg has a health crisis, two things are assured. One, there'll be speculation about how long until she dies. And two, I will refer to her as RGB. Those are the two. I don't know why, it's just stuck in my head. But yeah, those are the things that are gonna happen.
And also, you know, by the way, it's not even just like people who support or don't support, as my last thing, I promise, then we'll start the actual show. But there's supporters of people like RBG, and then they'll say, oh my God, she's gonna die. Calm down, just relax. Like, I don't know, I'm a big believer in don't put that energy out there.
Yeah, yeah, and I got news for you, we're all gonna die. Okay, with that positive note, why don't we jump into happy news concerning the migrant crisis. New information has come out about some of what Donald Trump wanted to do down at his wall on the border. This is coming from Michael Shear, Julie Hirschfeld's upcoming book, Border Wars, Inside Trump's Assault on Immigration, being reported on by the New York Times. And this is a doozy, hold on to your butts. So he has said privately, the president's talked about fortifying a border wall with a water-filled trench, otherwise known as a moat, stocked with snakes or alligators, prompting aides to seek a cost estimate. And every word in that sentence is 35% crazier than the word before, ending with, aides seriously tried to figure out how much it would cost to stock a moat thousands of miles long with alligators.
It was probably
That's
one
the
of
thing that was done.
It was probably one of the more fun days working with this insane president. When he says something like this, then you go, oh man, okay, so today we can at least just like estimate the cost of alligators, crocodiles, moats along an entire border length. This will be fun because we know we're not taking this seriously. This is an off day. Hey, you guys, hey, Jim, let's go research this craziness, and then this will kind of be a day off.
Yeah. Here's a sentence, shouldn't have to be said. The president of the United States wanted unaccompanied minors to be devoured by alligators at the border. That's where we're at in America. He wanted them to be eaten by alligators alternatively bitten by snakes. He would be okay with the snakes. Mm-hmm. And if they happen to get past the alligators and the snakes, and he probably looked into velociraptors, turns out really expensive, where do you find the amber, all of that. They would find that things did not get much better after that. He wanted the wall electrified, thousands of miles of electrified wall, and he wanted it to be concrete. Two, he wanted an electrified concrete wall. He also wanted spikes on top that could pierce human flesh. So if you jump like a cartoon on the backs of the alligators, dodging the snakes, why did it have to be snakes? You then scale the electrified concrete wall. At the top, you get impaled on spikes. That's the sort of thing, I don't know, like kids draw crazy like fortifications for castles. Does he think that the US is like a tower defense game? He's a grown adult, and this is what he brings up in official meetings in the White House.
This is what they have to talk about. Wile E. Coyote comes into the room and he says, hey, I just got this package from Acme, and I'm gonna be able to swing it across the bridge and hit the Roadrunner, AKA Mexicans crossing the border, hit him right in the face because they're so fast. Again, these are human beings. This goes back to what we already see from the beginning when he says they're rapists, they're murderers, they're drug dealers, because they're subhuman and they have the superhuman strength. They can jump over moats and climb against electrified fences. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, they're coming to get us.
Yeah.
What is the motivation, you think, for them coming to get us to the point where you think you have to put in medieval castles and moats and drawbridges at the border? No, man, he doesn't live in reality. No, and then again, because he'll deny it, I'm sure here, that, oh, fake news, I can't believe you guys would say such a thing about me. You've said these things before, or things similar to those things, so there's a reason to believe this level of crazy.
Exactly, and look, I'm sort of reacting the way I always do this sort of thing. A defense mechanism is to laugh about how ridiculous it is, but this is just, like, everybody thinks, and has always thought, that what they oppose is evil. Most of the time, they've been wrong. But I mean, how are you supposed to respond to this? A person who wants kids to be eaten by alligators. Like, how are you supposed to look at that and say that what we oppose is not the personification of evil? That the president isn't like a 300-pound bag of pure evil, like a glad bag of ooze. that's not what we're against right now. How can you think that? And I know that I say this stuff a lot and I've been saying it for years, but like we tried to stop him. We did. Not everyone did. We tried to stop him, and ever since he became president, we've been trying to hold him accountable, but because we knew that this is what we would be facing, and that the cost that we would not have to pay, others would have to pay, people who need our help would have to pay, we knew what would happen. And so my conscience is clear, at least on that count.
There's simple facts. Alligators have to survive. You're in the middle of certain parts of different climates. What about the water? Are you getting the water you're putting in there? There's a zoo now. Again, the detached nature of this guy from reality is off the charts. So then part of this fact finding and researching they had to do for that day was, okay, how much water, where do we get it from? What do alligators eat? How can we feed them? Are they domesticated? Do we get them from the wild? Get out?
And what if they do get out? Not the alligators, but what if the literal human beings who are crossing the border and have a legal right to asylum, what if they get past all this? So they've jumped past the alligators, dodged snakes, crawled up the electric concrete wall, been impaled on the spike, but somehow survived it. They pull themselves off the spike and then they get over. What happens to them then? After publicly suggesting that soldiers shoot migrants if they threw rocks, the president backed off when his staff told him that that was illegal. He had to be told that was illegal. But later in a meeting, aides recalled, he suggested that they shoot migrants in the legs to slow them down. That's not allowed either, they told him. And I can just presume that he threw a hissy fit after that. So shoot them in the end. It always comes down to shoot them. And here's the thing, again, he's going to deny that any of this happened. The idea that he would ever suggest shooting migrants, but it's a little bit easier to believe when you remember his reaction to this joke.
When you have 15,000 people marching up and you have hundreds and hundreds of people and you have two or three border security people that are brave and great, and don't forget, we don't let them and we can't let them use weapons. We can't. Other countries do. We can't. I would never do that. But how do you stop these people? You can't. There's no... That's only in the panhandle you can get away with that statement.
So in case you couldn't hear that, that was a supporter yelling out, shoot them, gun down these migrants, to which he jokes around. It's really funny. In the background, you have all those people just so gleeful, so happy that I'm in a place, finally I'm in a place where you can just openly joke about murdering these people.
Again, it's shoot migrants in the legs to slow them down, not kill them. Because, you know, people getting shot in the legs, that never results in any kind of harm except for to slow them down. So they'll go from that extreme 55 mile an hour pace that they're running across the desert because mm-hmm. they're superhumans, mm-hmm. but also subhuman at the same time. Mm-hmm. Shoot them in the leg and it'll slow them down to a cool 20 miles an hour. And then we can go ahead and, what, watch them bleed out? How does it work after that?
He talks about it like it's a scene from Terminator 2.
Yep.
Honestly, that's the way he talks about it. I'm going to jump ahead to one last thing because I would expect that at this point, no strong Trump supporters will have gotten to this point in the video. But if you did, and if you don't have a problem with any of that, and you know that you don't, I'm going to jump to the last graphic. When the president demanded flat black paint on his border wall, Kirstjen Nielsen said it would cost an additional $1 million per mile, as if that would stop him since it's not his money. When he ordered wall construction sped up, she said they needed permission from property owners. Take the land, Mr. Trump would say, and let them sue us. How many times over how many years have the right wing both had a principled stand against slash spread conspiracy theories about the US government going down to the south of America and just taking the land? And they lost their minds over Jade Scorpion and all these operations, all the conspiracy theories. Trump is just saying, yeah, take it. They can sue us if they want. I don't care. It's my land. It's not rights and freedoms and liberties and all that. Forget that. It's mine. I'm taking it. And they can sue us if they want.
Americans' land rights, who cares? Again, that should resonate every time he goes down and talks to you about how you have these rights of course, you throw through military, Second Amendment. He went through that whole list. Second Amendment's coming, military's coming, everything you want to say do you think are trigger words. It looked like a list, a desperate list to make people go, oh, he said trigger words. Yeah. I'm on your side again.
Yeah, yeah. You're on his side, but you might not be on your land because he might steal it from you. Okay, we're going to take a short break. We come back. Different human rights abuses going on around the world after this.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Around the globe, there are multiple extremely serious human rights abuses currently ongoing, but so far inside of the Democratic primary contest, we've had multiple debates, very little talk about these crises. So when are the candidates actually going to make clear what they think should be done in regards to these situations? How do we put pressure on them to do that? We're joined now by a guest who is working to do that actually. This is Imam Malik Mujahid, president of Justice for All and also involved in a number of other incredibly worthy causes. Welcome to the show, we're very glad to have you here.
Well, good to be with you, John.
Thank you so much. So you're working on an op-ed, as we sort of alluded to put pressure on the candidates to come out and talk about these issues. So overall, what are you looking to hear? What are you hoping to find out from these candidates about a number of the issues that you're involved in?
Well, one of the major issues is I went through all the websites of these candidates. They do not talk about human rights at all even foreign policy, reference to largest refugee crisis in the world or the largest concentration camp of Uyghurs found in China or the largest refugee camp in Burma, which is in Bangladesh, they don't talk about these issues at all. So only one website, like Bernie Sanders' website, mentioned Tibetan, but at the same time, it ignores Uyghurs, which are in the largest concentration camp sitting at this moment. So I think they are operating under the influence of Trump agenda. Trump says America first and forget about human rights, which seems to be the meaning of it. Under that thing, Democratic presidential candidate are not talking about foreign policy enough. They're not talking about human rights. For God's sakes, they're not talking about genocide or genocide treaty.
Yeah.
It's JR. I was wondering, because when it comes to at least getting presidents or presidential candidates or any politician at all to talk about something that's being ignored, you have to get enough of the populace to press them for it, especially lately, because everyone has a voice, or at least can post something about their voice now. I feel like that has to change as well. How do you get just your regular common folk, your friends, your family to start paying attention to these things? Because even though maybe even the people that support Trump don't care, neither does Trump, but a lot of times people who don't support him or that party, they also generally miss something that's happening around the world. How do you make that more clear to folks?
Well, that's a difficult task because, mainstream media also ignores those type of issues. And that's where Young Turks comes in. I mean, I will give you one example. Right now in India, India has sent 1 million forces, occupied Kashmir, for 2 months now, to be exact 58 days. No one out of 15 million people can come out of their homes. They cannot get medicine. They don't have a cell phone. Even landline is cut off. Horrible treatment. And Bill Gates here was awarding the Prime Minister of India, Modi. Yeah. So we ask people to sign a petition. And 100,000 people on 10-day notice signed a petition asking Bill Gates not to award this thing to Modi. That became a news, and this thing came out in different mainstream media and whatnot. Probably not as much because of the human rights situation, but because of Bill Gates. Yeah. But whatever is the reasoning, this thing worked out. So we are using social media, conversation, briefing people. As an interfaith leader, I'm talking to interfaith colleagues to talk about it. But it is an uphill battle when opinion makers and influencers and the mainstream media wants to ignore a topic, it becomes difficult.
Yeah,
and I think that crisis is a great example of what you're talking about the silence from politicians in general, but also the media not focusing on it very much. I'm curious on this particular topic. Have you seen anything, whether on the candidates' websites or in public speeches, addresses? Is this something that's being talked about by any of the candidates?
Well. Two candidates so far has distinguished themselves. One is Bernie Sanders. He spoke about the Kashmir issue very clearly, right of people for human rights, the right of self-determination, which United Nations promised 70 years ago, which is a big joke in itself. And also Castro. Castro has talked about Uyghur issue in the debate, and he is the only one who talked about Uyghur issue or any human rights issue, except that another candidate, Senator Warren, she talked about putting human rights experts when we are negotiating in trade. So there are some people who have touched it here and there, but not on their website, and only Castro brought it up in the debates.
And there's been a few theme debates. We had the climate focused debate. We're about to have there's a town hall coming up for gun violence. But so far, I haven't heard anything about a foreign policy focused town hall. I'm curious to get your opinion on. We happen to be on an important date, an anniversary. It's the 1 year anniversary of the murder of Jamal Khashoggi, a Washington Post journalist. And you had talked earlier about Donald Trump effectively just backing off of any concern for international human rights. This feels like a particularly good example of that. Do you have any thoughts on this anniversary?
Donald Trump is not only backing off, but he is protecting criminal people around the world. He stood with Modi in an event in Houston, in which Modi, a fascist, which was blocked to coming into the USA for 10 years, endorsed him. And he is the one who is standing with the Saudi king or the half king, whatever that guy is called, protecting him against the brutal murder which was done to an honorable person. There is a big struggle in the Muslim world, and that struggle is for freedom, justice, and democracy. That's what Arab Spring was about. That's what Sudanese stood up. That's where Syrian stood up, and that's where Jamal Khashoggi stood up. He stood up as an individual, came to the safe place. Unfortunately, America failed to protect that honorable man.
I agree, unfortunately. If anyone watching this would like to get involved to help you in this effort to get the candidates to come out in a strong way about these issues, is there any place you would point them towards to do that?
I would say go on a stopgenocide.org or freekashmir.org. But I have an idea. Why not Young Turks call a town hall meeting in which these people are invited to talk about the foreign policy as well as human rights and our commitment to democracy and freedom of religion?
I think that that is a very good idea. We're actually working on a climate-focused town hall, but I will definitely bring that up. And thank you so much for joining us and shedding light on these issues. We try to focus a little bit more on them here, but even we don't give them the time that they deserve. And so we appreciate you bringing your expertise on these topics.
Thank you so much, John. Truly appreciate what you do.
Thank you. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, more threats. These focused domestically. We'll break them down after this. You might have heard something in the news about an impeachment inquiry. Turns out all that's fake news. There's not an impeachment inquiry going on. There is a coup happening before our very eyes, according to the most trustworthy sources I can find, including Donald Trump. So he tweeted this, "As I learn more and more each day," which he totally does, "I am coming to the conclusion that what is taking place is not impeachment. It is a coup intended to take away the power of the people, their vote, their freedoms, their Second Amendment, religion, military, border wall, and their God-given rights as a citizen of the United States of America." So first of all, who taught him coup? Come on, you can't just leave words around. You know he's going to use them irresponsibly. And so he is attempting to pretend that the very careful, slow, took way too long to get to here, implementation of a provision in the Constitution is the same thing as a bunch of people with assault rifles walking into the White House and dragging him away.
Well, considering the people who support him probably were gung-ho for that anytime anyone else is in office, I think it's a little bit ironic. But let's look at I know yesterday on the Young Turks we did, we actually defined what the word is that they're trying to say and gave them the real meaning. So a coup is a sudden, violent, and illegal seizure of power from a government. This is a track record again for Donald Trump in saying anything that comes after or violates him, from him violating his business ties before when he came in office, to his tax returns, to all the legal things he does. If anybody criticizes him, he calls that critical of the government and of America.
That's true.
You are not America. You are not the citizenry. You're one guy who's in office who can be taken out of office, or he can be discovered to be doing illegal things and then be taken out of office. That's not taking America out of office. You are not the form of government. That is dictatorial kind of talk. If you're the government, you alone, and all your interests is the government, that means that's only you.
Yeah.
He's admitting it right there.
And when you gave a definition that had three characteristics. I'll go super easy on them. Let's say if one it applies, it's a coup. So is it sudden? No, it's taking way too long. Way too long, years too long. Is it violent? No, there's been no violence. Is it illegal? Nope, it's constitutional. It's the definition of constitutional because it's in the Constitution. So you've got some issues there. But I jokingly asked who taught him coup, but we already know who taught him coup. Take a look at this mashup that our producer Sophie put together.
This is nothing less than an attempted coup d'etat and end run around the ballot box. And I see all these polls out there. Here's like the poll question. Maybe Fox can do a poll on this. It's to the American people. Should the impeachment process be used to depose a duly elected president when they can't beat him at the ballot box?
I think everybody who is concerned about what's going on should drop the word impeach or impeachment. This is not an impeachment process. This is a coup d'etat.
Well, I think they're going to try to impeach him. And every time you hear the word impeachment, you have to substitute the word coup, and the coup needs to be shut down. The Senate should say going to be no trial.
Well, that's an administrative coup d'etat. I mean, it's not overstatement to say that's what it is.
I want to know if Adam Schiff, the Democrat staffers, or any Democrats were involved in orchestrating this leak and coup campaign.
Understand, this is a coup attempt.
That one was concise. Thank you, Sophie, for putting that together. Media Matters, by the way, has collected far more of these, but we have a time limit. So that's what we had. That's where this is coming from. They're just drilling in and coup over and over. And obvious about it, not even saying this is a coup. Like, what's his face? Tom Fitton or whatever was like, every time you hear the word impeachment, you should substitute coup. And Hannity says, good idea. That's just, you're just admitting that that's a strategy. That's not an acknowledgement of any reality.
Remember last week when the talking points in the White House, it was accidentally sent to a Democrat or someone who wasn't on the list to actually repeat your talking points. And then I'm not sure how they denied that, but all you have to do is say no. This is again, it illustrates it openly. Send out the word, everyone say it. And then even with the messaging, your messaging blitz is being fleshed out on television. So again, like you said, when Hannity was talking to me, he goes, hey, that's a good idea. Not because that's true, not because, yeah, this is what it is. Yeah, that's a good idea, let's say that. Because it's better for the empty-minded people that we can say this to. Yeah. Let's throw these words out there so they can start repeating it to their friends at Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah, yeah, and look, we're focusing a lot on Fox News recently because this is, as we'll get into later on the show, this is his defense, effectively. Rudy Giuliani turning out not to be super effective, and so Fox News is the ones. Here's the thing, you're allowed to attempt to impeach the president. You are, doesn't mean that in every case it seems justified, but you're allowed to do that. It's in the Constitution, and I would say that if you're going to attempt to pitch an impeachment attempt as the duly elected president being deposed, this is the worst one to try to apply that to, considering that in 2016 he didn't win the popular vote, and that in 2018 he got his butt whooped. The idea that this is overthrowing the will of the voters who weren't with him initially and were more against him the second time, that is a very interesting, weird sort of like projection, like trying to flip reality on its head. But while it's completely inaccurate, that does not mean it's not effective for Donald Trump. Yep. And not just in terms of bulking up his approval numbers amongst his base, but possibly getting the civil war that he has been talking about so much. So take a look at a couple of the people who are really eager to tote an AR-15 in defense of the president. One of the Oath Keepers militia Twitter account posted, "We are on the verge of a hot civil war, like in 1859. That's where we are. And the right has zero trust or respect for anything the left is doing. We see them as illegitimate too. Trump supporters will not accept the results of a successful impeachment as legitimate, even though it is, again, the very definition of constitutional. They will not accept it as legitimate. So what will they do?" We have a member of the Three Percenters. That's another one of these bizarre militia things, supposedly made up of members of the police and the armed forces. Put up a video saying, "At the end of the day, Mr. President, just know that if they try some illegal move to remove you from the presidency, all you have to do is come out on Twitter or national media and call us to arms. And we will show the world once again that America has the largest freestanding army with weapons and firepower that they can't even begin to fathom. You will have an army at your side at a moment's notice, Mr. President. All you have to do is say the word." So they're saying, if Donald Trump decides that American democracy is no longer in style, they are desperate to be told to begin killing their neighbors. Like, just go on Twitter, tell us to begin shooting, and this American experiment is done. I don't know what percentage of his followers that is. I don't know if it's 100 people, if it's 10,000 people, if it's 1 million people, but they're desperate to end American democracy.
It's crazy. We keep talking about how America's military was depleted, it was dragging on the ground, our economy was garbage. Then I came into office, and next thing I know, everything is awesome. We've got invisible jets, we've got more tanks, we got more guns, we got more this. And he talks about how he spent all these trillions of dollars on the military. which he did. So the theys that they keep talking about in the Oath Keepers, if they try some illegal move, you'll have an army at your side at a moment's notice. Against who?
Yeah.
So again, if there's some kind of coup, who's the uprising? Is it against the American military? Or is the American military Donald Trump's military now? That's, which one is it? Who are you fighting against?
Yeah.
Are you fighting against these invisible effing jets? Because you're not going to win that battle. Because we just talked about how we just put trillions into making sure anybody who has any kind of uprising against our American military will destroy you. How's that going to work out for you?
Yeah, and look, honestly, I feel bad for any member of the police or the military that's watching this. Like, knowing that there are people around you who are, they're just, like, frothing at the mouth to murder you to overthrow American democracy. That's what they're saying. I don't have a gun. I'm not the one they're gonna be fighting against. They're gonna be trying to kill members of the American armed forces. That's a weird take for patriots.
Crazy. Support the troops all over again.
And here's the thing, he talked about civil war on Twitter. He talked about it being a coup on Twitter. So if he did, I don't think it's gonna happen, but if he did want to start some sort of, you know, like, we're done with the Constitution, we're done with the American government, it would be on Twitter. He would tweet it. And it's the reason that Kamala Harris posted, "Hey Jack, time to do something about this," referencing his tweet. Now, many people have pointed out that this is an attempt to get attention to her campaign or whatever. I'm sure that that is a part of it, certainly. But the idea that the president would use social media, like, first of all, democracies have been overthrown. Do you believe that if there had been Twitter and Facebook back then, the fascists wouldn't have used it to try to rally their supporters? We can say it's unlikely, but we can't say that it's unreasonable or that it's unrealistic. And so when I see people respond to things like what Kamala Harris said, not just as this seems politically opportunistic, but with things like Nate Silver tweeted, "Hey Jack, as a journalist, I think Trump's tweets are extremely newsworthy. And I'm happy that you've given the president of the United States a platform to communicate in a direct and unfiltered way with the public." Here's the thing, should Trump be taken off Twitter? I don't know. I think that there are costs to him being on it, and there are costs that Nate Silver doesn't pay, that Donald Trump doesn't pay. But we can have a debate about that. But the idea that Trump would never or could never do anything violent over social media, that is blissfully naive. And so it makes sense that Nate Silver would be the avatar for that position.
There's a lot of things that are newsworthy. Hey, the foot soldier for Trump that decided to go and try and murder journalists and went on that rampage, and if he posted all of his things on Facebook and Twitter, hey, that's newsworthy. We looked into it all. Doesn't mean it's helpful. It's two different things. It can totally be newsworthy. People giving throwing out death threats and saying, "I'm gonna go and attack the president." I think you might think that's newsworthy too, but I don't think you want that spread so easily.
I think so. No. No. Nate Silver, he's got the Biden thing, both in that he probably supports Biden, but also this idea that, like, we're in a crazy time, but we're almost out of it, and everything is going to go back to the great way it was. It probably won't, and it wasn't. Okay, we're going to take a short break. We come back, more to depress you after this.
You know, if it wasn't your show, Sean, they would destroy him absolutely. You're the difference between Donald J. Trump and Richard Nixon.
So that's a great analogy by Geraldo there. In a little bit, I'll show you what Hannity thought of that analogy being made. But he's right. Trump has Fox News to defend him. And when you have Fox News and the millions of people that watch them every day, you can accomplish amazing nonsensical things in terms of what people believe about reality. So this is a warning to you. I'm about to reveal a fact that will make you dumber just having known that it's true. So feel free to click away. But if not, if you've girded yourself for this, just 4 in 10 Republicans say they think President Trump discussed an investigation into Democratic presidential rival Joe Biden during a phone call with Ukraine's president, despite Trump acknowledging having done so. So even though Trump put out the transcript, has said that he did this, not even a majority of Republicans think that it happened. He said it. Your guy said it. The guy you worship. It's there. You can read it. You can listen to it. Whatever format you want. I'm sure it's available in Braille. It's available in every format. 40% think that it happened, even though everyone agrees that it happened.
This is what Trump's talking about when he talks about winning. Tired of winning yet. It's only winning with the clueless people. So anytime you can, you push people to the point where you don't even have to even tell the blatant empty lies, they just believe them even after you say the opposite. As long as it progresses you, you can even say, "Yeah, totally did it. I totally did it, but who cares? They'll be like, he didn't actually do it because I don't care. Because if I actually consume the fact that he did it, I have to care.
Yeah.
I don't want to care. So let's just say he didn't do what he just said he did. And it is backed up by not the transcript, but the call memo that came out, by the way.
One of my many flaws is that I still cling to the idea that belief means that you've acknowledged the truth of a thing when really it just means, I like that thought. I like it. I don't care if it's real. I like it. Here's the thing. What I just read to you is not actually as bad as it gets. That 40%, you might think, well, at least 40%, right? But I can't even say that those 40% accept reality, because let's dig a little bit deeper. The survey found that 40% of Republican respondents said Trump, quote, probably did raise the idea of an investigation. Meanwhile, 29% of Republicans said Trump probably did not. So that 40%, that's not even he definitely did. That's maybe he did, even though he did. I say he did, JR said he did, Trump says he did, the memo, transcript, whatever you want to call it, says that he did, probably did. So that compares to 85% of Democrats, so even 15% of Democrats, not quite sure. 61% of independents, so you got a little, you got a majority. So overall, 62% of the American public, when polled, acknowledge the literal truth that should have been shoved into their head by now.
How is it?
But again, it's been obscured.
If it was 92%, I'd be disappointed. Mm-hmm. They don't get what was directly said.
Yeah.
I don't know how you miss it. Well, I know how.
You know how. You want to see how? So we got a little bit. So let's go to the full Giuliani analogy that we started with earlier.
You know, if it wasn't your show, Sean, they would destroy him absolutely. You're the difference between Donald J. Trump and Richard Nixon. In Nixon's case, if he had someone that stuck up for him, he wouldn't have been, motivated to cover up that burglary. He would have let the perpetrators get their just desserts.
I don't necessarily agree with your analysis, but I will tell you, they lie.
He's like, well, no. Don't say that he's Nixon. Don't say that he's Nixon, but with the defense. So Geraldo there, who's like defending the president, is like, oh yeah, no, he's one of the worst criminals ever. But he's got you, so that's something.
He's like, hey Hannity, you know what? You're the Joseph Goebbels of 2019.
Yeah.
I mean, your propaganda machine every night on Fox News helps this president skirt the law every day.
Yeah.
Good job, Joseph.
Yeah. The Empire, it was really bad for them when the rebels found out about the destruction of Alderaan, but you're basically like a cover up of blowing up a planet, Hannity. So that's what they have.
They missed that history. Nixon was a bad guy.
Exactly. And the whole thing is that this is incredibly simple, but they have to pretend that it's not. Yeah. And sometimes they will just literally state what I just said, as you'll see.
As we're about to discover and go over some of the sensationalistic headline from yesterday, there's almost no there. There's a big headline that'll get your attention. Then you look at the story, it's easily explained.
I think it gets too much in the weeds. I think first they're going after the president with impeachment. Then they're going after Rudy Giuliani. Now it's Bill Barr. And America's saying, what? How are they all connected? Connect the dots for us. What are you talking about? It's just so much information.
So it's not. It's super simple. He tried to get the Ukrainians to do an investigation of his political rivals so that he would then sell the military arms. That's the whole thing. It's not Trump and then Giuliani and then Barr. He had some people working with him on it. That's as simple as it is. But no, there's too much information. I can't hold all these facts.
There's just three names you threw at me. Giuliani, Barr, Pompeo. How do I keep up? Now Trump. It's not like they all work together or anything.
And here's the thing. Let's say it is complicated, okay? I will give Ainsley Earhart that, even though it's not true. She's sitting there like, man, the American people are screaming out for the dots to be connected. I don't know who would do that. Okay, let's turn to the new pancake flavors. You're a journalist, supposedly. That's your job. You could have spent the minute you just used saying that to put the dots together. You don't have to say that he committed a crime. You don't have to say that you now support impeachment, but you could describe the story. You guys are on for literally hours every single morning. You've got the time.
Well, you know, as also Kilmeade said, those headlines, man, it calls out to what most people do. Read that headline, move on. Read the headline, and I'll tell you what to think of it, then move on.
Yeah.
They're too stupid to read everything else, so just read that headline. And the headline is so confusing. People don't want to see those headlines. How about you analyze it a little bit?
Exactly.
And give people something to read.
At least a little bit. Okay, we're gonna take a short break. We come back. Bernie Sanders says billionaires shouldn't exist. Let's find out what billionaires think about it. Okay, so we know that Bernie Sanders is the big structural change candidate, but he's not just opposing structures. He's also opposing people, groups of people and individuals. He has not been scared in the past to say that he does not believe that there should be billionaires, that billionaires are a policy failure, as you've probably heard. When he brought out his recent wealth tax, he said that, tweeting, there should be no billionaires. We are going to tax their extreme wealth and invest in working people. Read the plan. We did a video going into different components of that plan that you can find on our channel. And it turns out there are some people who have a problem with that sort of terminology. We call them billionaires. So they don't like that. And so recently, Christina Oleski tweeted a quote from apparently Blackstone's Schwartzman. So this is obviously a very wealthy investor saying, maybe Bernie Sanders shouldn't exist. It's kind of a threat, I think, because he's an individual. But anyway, the point is that he's not saying like, Schwartzman, you should be gone. That's not what he's saying. He's saying that we should have never gotten to the point through policies that created greater, ever greater income inequality that produced people who are extremely poor and billionaires more wealthy than the pharaohs of old. That's what he's saying. And so for them to respond in this incredibly personal and I would say threatening way, less than productive.
Yeah, it's I don't know. I guess the wording allowed them to do this more when he said they shouldn't exist. Because then we've already had this structure in America where we bow down to the rich and powerful as if they've got something on a better level of humanity than the rest of us.
We assume respect, they're more moral.
And yeah, and we also assume that they worked hard to get to what they've got. So when your wording should, I should tweak this. The wording should probably be more, our policies should not facilitate the creation of billionaires anymore. I know that's longer and it's not as snazzy and catchy.
But that's what he means.
Actually, yeah, so instead of having to say what I meant was or what Bernie meant was, now we have to go through all this because we know when you have an argument with a dumbed down group that generally is ready to be servants to someone else because there's this opportunity dream that's been put in front of a lot of people saying, hey, if you just allow billionaires and millionaires to continue to siphon off everyone else's wealth to collect it for themselves, you may be one day. Yeah. That doesn't work that way. It doesn't work out that way. When the amount of money that every other American puts into the system is downgraded so much.
Yeah.
Every time you buy anything, you're putting money into the system. Every time you work, you do something money in the system, and it's at a different level than other folks. And when you do that, you think they don't want your money? Oh, they come for you if you have one small mistake on your IRS.
That's true.
Your tax return policy.
More likely than coming after the rich.
Absolutely.
So, I'm going to jump ahead briefly. I'll come back to the Andy Lassner. But on this, what does billionaires should not exist actually mean? AOC tweeted, billionaires should not exist does not mean certain people should not exist. It means no person should have $1 billion. The ascent of billionaires is a symptom and outcome of an immoral system that tells people affordable insulin is impossible, but exploitation is fine. By the way, she's been very consistent on this. Back in January of this year, she said, I'm not saying that Bill Gates or Warren Buffett are immoral, but a system that allows billionaires to exist when there are parts of Alabama where people are still getting ringworm because they don't have access to healthcare is wrong. It's 100% true. It is not saying they shouldn't exist. It's saying the system should not have existed in a way that allowed them to accrue the wealth that they have.
Yep.
As you've probably heard many times, maybe you disagree, no person ever in the history of humanity has earned $1 billion. They've gotten $1 billion, but they haven't earned $1 billion, certainly not by themselves. And we are allowed to say as a society that certain types of ways of making money are not acceptable. If I could make $1 million for each person I shoot, you would not think that that's an okay way for me to get wealthy. And while exploiting people and keeping them in poverty and all of that isn't as bad as murdering them, we're allowed to say it's unacceptable. We're not going to allow it any longer. You've benefited from the system long enough. You bought off the politicians, you got the policies and the regulations that you wanted, you accrued sci-fi levels of wealth, and that needs to end. And so what we're going to do is we're going to set up a wealth tax. You're still going to be far wealthier than I will ever be. You're going to be so wealthy that you could spend more money every day than you could possibly imagine. At the end of that day, you could dive into a whole bunch of coins, Scrooge McDuck style. But you're not going to be as wealthy as you were because the rest of us are hurting and it's time that it ends.
Every time we talk about how the money gets stacked and sent certain ways, it's always the opposite way. We talk about welfare queens and we talk about entitlements and all that stuff. Those entitlements and those welfare queens are on the top of this food chain when it comes to money. Yes, your little several hundred dollars that gets taken out of your paycheck, when it goes to rich people, it's not just nothing. They collect it from so many people and it's given back to them. And then they screw things up for the economy and we go, oh, you messed it up? Let's give you everyone's money again. Yeah. That is how it works. And exactly. Until you believe it and have some kind of self-worth, they're going to continue to do it.
Exactly, 100%. And thankfully, we have some politicians that are willing to acknowledge that, both in terms of the rhetoric and also in terms of wealth taxes. There are multiple candidates of wealth taxes. I personally think Bernie's is a lot better than Warren's, but Warren is also willing to put in a wealth tax as well, long past due. Super fast iTunes review, because I want you guys to keep doing this. Plum Viper said, the host is very up to date on climate issues and has excellent guest hosts 3 days a week, thank you, JR, and some A-list guests sometimes as well. John never acts like he's bigger than the show or the subject matter like some pod people. That is a point that is not repeated nearly enough. The people who talk at you about the news, they're not the point of all of this. They are at best someone who helps keep you up to date. But the actual, the news, the action, that's what matters.
Pod people scare me.
They do for me as well, but not podlings. I like Dark Crystal.
I got big heads.
Thank you as always. We'll see you tomorrow morning. Rudy Giuliani, in his media appearances over the past few weeks, has been very good at detailing various offenses that he's apparently committed. He's done a lot of damage to himself. But he has a defense too, JR. Did you know that? He has a plan for how he's going to dig himself out of this hole. And it involves legal action, so what you'd sort of expect. But against who? No, not a person. Something. A metaphor, I think. He was talking over, I think, text messages with journalist Elena Plott. She asked him, what are you planning to do next? He said, looking at a jawsuit, I think he means lawsuit, but you never know, to end lawless action. She says, who are you going to sue? He says, the swamp. Trump versus the swamp. She says, how do you sue the swamp? He says, in federal court. Well, yeah, but that's not what I meant. That's not, well, with a suit on, obviously. Stupid questions from this journalist. I'd be standing upright. That's how you sue them. By the way, I love how game she is for this, that when she types, how do you sue the swamp, she capitalized the and swamp. He's the president's personal lawyer. And she tried to be like, okay, you're saying something crazy, so I'm gonna try to just nudge you to not be crazy anymore. And he's like, oh, you want me to be crazier?
He's like, I got you. I'm gonna check off the list now. Maybe he's looking to sue Jaws and he forgot the S.
The Jaws suit?
He goes, I was just watching this movie from 1972, bro. Mm-hmm. It was 74, whenever Jaws came out. He goes, man, he ate that fisherman. All he was trying to do is just catch him.
It's so time for action. He's gonna sue him in fish court.
We're going after Jaws, we're going after Swamp Thing, which again, what is it? So what's the lawsuit? He said,
I don't know.
Giuliani's been on TV talking about how great of an attorney he is. Mm-hmm. And then sarcastically said, I'm just a country attorney. Maybe I don't know much. No, you don't know much. Something has gone wrong with your brain. And also, like, I've been doing this for years. I know the right speak. I've taken down so many bad guys. What happened to your brain then? Mm-hmm. How does this work? Did some of your lawsuits, did some of your prosecutions have anything to do with Giuliani versus the mafia?
A mythical creature?
How did you go after the mafia? In court? What'd you charge them with?
Stuff.
It's so weird. Bad things.
Yeah.
Like, now, if he was that guy then, he would have never made a name for himself, would never been whoever he was. Something has happened to his brain where he's been taken over. There's a different kind of Trump derangement syndrome.
Yeah.
It is not opposed to him. It's the people that support him.
Yeah. There's one other aspect of his legal strategy that worries me. So when you find out that this guy, Rudy Giuliani, is the personal lawyer of the president, for me, I think for a lot of reasonable people, it makes you worry about the president, because who would choose this person as their legal defender? Thing is, yesterday, Rudy Giuliani brought on a new lawyer. What's up with that person? Who is defending Rudy Giuliani at this point? We'll see. Maybe it'll work for him. In terms of his legal strategy, we have a little bit more details. I think he was on with Laura Ingraham, I think, and he said they, talking about Democrats in Congress, are doing extraordinary things. For example, they are violating, they're interfering with the president and exercising his rights under Article 2. The president, United States, conducts the foreign policy of the United States. This is worse than McCarthy. So I can't necessarily combine these two things. I'm not saying he's gonna sue all the Democrats in Congress, but that's as specific as he's been about his legal strategy at this point.
It's depressing. This is worth, again, we talked before, there's other stories whenever you hear trigger words. Mm-hmm. Trump was going through the trigger words. Military, migrants, yeah, all this stuff. Second Amendment. So again, you throw out the McCarthy. And people go, wait, what about McCarthy? What's the comparison? Why are we talking about him right here now? Just so people can go, worse than McCarthy. Juliana just told me, so I should totally be on board with whatever he's telling me I should say.
It's one of the buzzwords people throw out there to fool people into to agreeing with them. And the final point I'll say about this is during the Mueller investigation, one of the biggest issues with that, and there are many, was that Donald Trump never had to testify to Mueller. It's insane, insane that he was allowed to get through without doing that. Rudy Giuliani didn't. That's more understandable because he wasn't as big a part of the administration at that point unofficially. This time, I don't think he's necessarily going to be able to avoid it. I'm not saying Donald Trump is going to come and testify, but perhaps, I mean, Clinton did back in the 90s. But Giuliani is going to have to. What's going to happen when he's being questioned by these people? I mean, I guess he's not going to have the Kamala Harris grilling that some people have gotten, but this guy, he can't stand up to Laura Ingraham's questions. You think he's going to stand up to all the Democrats? They're doomed.
Listen,
and especially because it's all out there. We already know all this.
Yeah, listen for the laughing cues from Rudy Giuliani. I'm sure you've noticed. When you watch enough of him, anytime someone says something that's challenging or fact-based that kind of puts him in a corner, it's ha ha ha. When he's talking about the State Department, he goes, the State Department told me to do it. Well, when the chuckles come, there's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Any day now, Laura Ingraham's gonna be like, hey, by the way, can we play poker? Can I play you in poker, please? Can you just let's play high stakes poker because I really want to play against you. Everybody has tells, as we were talking about in the break, people reveal themselves. That's one of the fundamental truths of the world. Rudy Giuliani has revealed himself, and soon he's going to do it before Congress. Okay, with that, that's all the time we have. Thank you for hanging out with us, sticking around for the overtime. We will see you on tomorrow's show. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.